Welcome, popcorn munchers, to episode 95 of the Nerd Stravaganza podcast, where no night is bad, even if it's bad movie night. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And in this episode, we'll be fondly recalling our recent bad movie night. But first, let's recap this week's events with our Geekly Weekly Weekly Geekly Roundup. Brian, what have you been up to since last week?
I feel like a one-track record lately. I went to the Renaissance Fair, and I'm going to complain about the cheesy theme weekend. Game of Thrones weekend?
Oh.
Which was dress up like Khal Drogo weekend, and dress up like Daenerys weekend.
You mean Khaleesi?
Yes, dress up like Khaleesi.
Yes. Great, how was that?
It wasn't nearly as bad as I had thought. There were like 14 Khal Drogos running around, and like not a single guy like dressed like any kind of recognizable knight or Ned or Ser or anything. But I did see one guy in this really funny, like entirely felt dragon costume, and he was just running around holding up a sign that says, "Have you seen my mommy?"
I do like that.
That was clever. So at least one person like made it clever. And I think I mentioned this to you privately, but I'll mention to everyone just because I was so proud of the guy. Although I'll probably bork it up because I have no idea how to be politically correct. There was a little person there who was not dressed up like Tyrion. So good for him. Good for him.
Yes. Awesome, man. What was he dressed up as? Anything Game of Thrones related or something else?
Nope. He was just chilling.
Nice. Awesome. He resisted the temptation to be typecast as Tyrion.
I'm very proud of him, even if I don't know what to call him. Sorry, guy.
Okay, so back to the RenFest. Anything else?
I've been working on something I'm pretty excited about, but it's not working out real well. One of my Kickstarters, I may have mentioned recently, came in, and I've got some pieces for Drake the Dragon War Game, and I just love dragons, so I'm very excited about having this war game. But damn, these pieces are complicated. This one dragon I'm working on first is it's like 15 pieces, and it's plastic, resin, and metal. So it's just like all kinds of stuff that I've never worked with together before. And yeah, I can't. It's a monster to get him put together. I guess this is more advanced than I'm used to.
Was that the dragon or a similar dragon to the one you showed me at our last game night?
Yeah. Same one I showed you. And he was looking good, but I had kind of cheaped out on him. I didn't really pin anything. I just glued it together because I thought, like, let me get this up so I can show it off. And gosh, was it Monday night, Tuesday night? I gave him the slightest little jar, and he, like, burst, like, in five pieces. Like, his wings went flying off, and his legs flew apart, and so the joints are just, like, really, really tiny, and the glue won't hold, so you gotta put the little metal pins in there to hold them together.
Wow, so more labor-intensive than your average mini.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do that for War Machine 2, but it's not nearly as required. Like, some of my War Machine stuff is more fragile than it could be, but I don't really have any problems with it, like, bursting into several pieces. Seriously, this was, like, a gentle love tap, and he just flew apart, so definitely requires the pinning.
Mm. Well, apart from that labor-intensive endeavor, anything else?
The ever-popular game night, we were at Adventure Game Store, and we played a bunch of new games. To me, I've never actually had a chance to play Seven Wonders before, which I loved. That was awesome. And I feel sympathetic because I know position kind of put a damper in some people's enjoyment. The poor gentleman across from me trying to build a military, for instance.
Yes.
But I really liked the game overall. And most of us were able to come up with a pretty successful strategy. I don't think there was anything in the game that prevented it. You just kind of got screwed. So I dug that. That was neat. I'm going to play that again. I guess I'm part Eurogamer after all.
Nice.
And what about you, Tom? What was your favorite game?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. I actually really enjoyed Seven Wonders. I had no idea what to make of it until we played it, and I had a great time with that. And we also did, what was it, Forbidden Desert after that?
Forbidden Desert, the sequel to Forbidden Island?
Right, yeah. That was also cool. You're trying to find the parts of an airship so you can escape the Forbidden Desert. Both really great games. We are, with our game night, alternating between X-Wing and sort of just opening up the floor every other week to, I guess, Euro games or games in general, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I see the appeal of Euro games, but there's nothing wrong with a good game of Scrabble.
Right. So, general gaming mixed in with X-Wing, and so our game nights are becoming more diverse. Let's see, apart from the game night, doing some video gaming, getting pretty close to finishing up Dishonored on the Xbox 360, still playing the Uncharted game on the PS Vita, and of course got Titanfall and barely got to play it because I've been so busy. But looking forward to really digging into that. That is a great game. I don't know that it's a system seller. I don't know that any one game is a system seller. But if you were considering an Xbox One, it might push you over the edge if you like a awesome robot-based first-person shooter. Also went and saw the anime film, the Miyazaki film, his final film, The Wind Rises, which was really cool. Kind of an interesting commentary on militarism and the engineer as an artist and how the engineer's works can be appropriated for bad uses. I recommend that. And, oh, the television show Cosmos started, and I got to see that, and it was awesome. A reboot of the classic Carl Sagan TV series now featuring Neil deGrasse Tyson.
No spoilers, I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah, I won't mention anything. It's about space. Already stirring up some controversy, that show, though you wouldn't think so with sort of the young Earth creationist crowd and so on. I don't think that there should be any controversy, but I'm not going to get into politics. Watch Cosmos. It's a great show, and I can't recommend it enough. Also, final thing, I submitted some questions to another local podcast called the Nerd Porn Podcast. They wanted some trivia questions to ask their hosts, and I was able to stump them by asking three questions that they were not able to answer.
Nice.
Yes. It all had to do with classic gaming, so I felt like I was a super nerd, because these guys are themselves super nerds, and I think we will do them the solid of linking up to them in the show notes, so check them out, the Nerd Porn Podcast. No porn. Just letting you know right up front. No porn.
It's nerd porn.
Right, porn for nerds, which does not involve pornography. So it's great. It's rated like PG-13. Not even. And that concludes my update, which I think brings us into tonight's topic, which is bad movie night. This is something we've been talking about doing for a while. I think for years, because we've got a collection of awful movies that we wanted to watch. And we picked movies that represented two distinct categories within the constellation of bad movies. The first category is the bad good movie, so bad it's good. You watch it for the entertainment value because it's so bad you want to laugh at it. And the bad bad movie, which really just doesn't have any redeeming qualities and you want to laugh at it, but you can't laugh through your tears. So, Brian, why don't you let the audience know what those two films were?
They were Battlefield Earth in, what was it, 2003? Ang Lee's The Hulk.
Yes.
The later version. I hear that was good. I don't want to malign it.
The jury's still out on that one. At least ours is. So the bad good movie was Battlefield Earth, and the bad bad movie was Ang Lee's 2003 flop, The Hulk. Even though I introduced them in a particular order, we can go back and forth and discuss them in whatever order we want. So, any burning comments on either of those you want to kick this discussion off with?
I'm trying to come up with something that exemplifies the Hulk, and I would go back a little to a conversation we recently had with our guest Eric, where I won the, you know, my fandom was ruined more debate by just being horribly depressed over what they did to the Hobbit.
Yes.
That's how I felt watching Hulk. I was just depressed. I'm not even that big of a huge Hulk fan. Christ, this movie was a stinker.
I agree. There's really not much good I can say about it. It had a couple of funny moments. And look, this is an 11-year-old movie, so it's about to get spoiled. You probably don't want to watch it anyway. The mutated dogs that were like fed Hulk juice were comical. They really looked kind of cartoonish. Their proportions were all messed up. And one of them was a French poodle with a French poodle cut.
Hulked out, muscled, complete with a French poodle cut.
Yes. So, really dumb. Yeah, the movie, I get that he was trying to make a serious movie and how horrible it would be to be a person who has this rage monster inside. But I ended up just not caring. Like, I didn't like Bruce Banner as a character. I get that he is like this sort of scientist guy who's a little awkward, but it was played way too monotone for me. And when he became more emotionally well-rounded was when he was the Hulk. Instead of a pretty much massive rage beast, we got his face, you know, with like sensitive looks, and he was pondering things and puzzling things out. Do you agree? I mean, did you see that as well throughout the movie? Like, this uncontrollable personification of rage was actually like scratching his chin and reconsidering his actions from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, I mean, I think there was one point where Bruce was like staring in the mirror and the Hulk like stared back, but like he was trying to contemplate something and the Hulk was the only thing capable of doing it.
Right. So this beast is not an outlet for all of his rage. It's like a funnel to his missing personality. And I guess if you view emotions as sort of a reflection of man's more primitive and impulsive nature, then maybe it makes sense for the Hulk to be hyper emotional, whereas Bruce Banner himself is very reserved. But the Hulk as a monster is one dimensional and pretty much always has been in my mind. And that one dimension involves a lot of smashing and raging.
Maybe this is what Ang Lee was going for, because I can kind of sort of see maybe being able to reach for it, like as we discuss it. But I hated that the Hulk was always a part of Bruce. Like, he was born that way, and he was born with this thing inside of him, and the gamma radiation just let it out.
Right, I didn't like that. That was because his father had injected some experimental serum into himself and then passed it on to Bruce. So he was born with whatever this factor was that his dad had introduced into his genes, I guess, somehow.
So I saw it as almost like this weird, like, new Superman, like him having these powers and having to repress them, like, for all time, and thereby losing his emotions and thereby losing his humanity, and I'm not even being able to relate to the girl, kind of, because somehow, even though he wasn't able to relate to her, she had a long-term relationship with him.
I see. So you're saying that this factor that he inherited meant that he had to go out of his way not to emote, lest this rage monster, even before the gamma radiation hit, come out?
Yeah, kind of. I think that's like, that's why he was so flat. He was supposed to be flat because he had been hiding something about himself for forever and ever.
Right, okay. Because it was implied, like, he, as a kid, when he was frustrated, it was showing him, like, borderline hulking out. He was getting, like, green splotches on his skin and so on, right?
Yeah, like the weird brown-eyed baby.
Let's not get into that. How a blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid turns out to be a brown-haired, brown-eyed adult. let's just assume that that was the Hulk factor injection that his dad gave himself and then passed on to Bruce, I guess. But right, then he gets gamma irradiated. Wasn't the accident kind of stupid, too? How did he get that radiation dose?
So they were working on the super soldier serum, and the lab tech like screwed something up. The lab tech like caused that weird spark and his hand was stuck.
Oh, right.
It was okay. Just a screw up. He just like made an accident.
Right. So Banner goes in to try to fix this machine from exploding. This, by the way, dumb comic colored machine. They went overboard with the like, pastel comic background colors. We'll get into that too. But right, so to save this guy, he gets in front of the core of this machine as it explodes, emitting a gamma ray burst, which I hate to break it to you, will just pass right through you. I mean, you can't just stand in the way. I'll absorb all of these, at least if my understanding of gamma rays is correct.
I can't think of a single ray that would actually work for.
Right, but maybe it was because of his, like, Hulk factor again. And I can't state enough that his dad injected into himself and then passed on to his son. That caused him to absorb the rays, and it woke up this latent ability. I won't say ability. It woke up this latent tendency to, well, to Hulk out. And the next time he had a bad dream or something pissed him off, of course, he became the emotional Hulk that I didn't like.
Again, I'm probably trying way too hard to actually make this movie work. But I know, like, later in the film, his father was trying to gather energy. So maybe his Hulk cells tried to actually absorb the gamma radiation. Maybe that's why he...
Oh! Succeeded.
I don't think so, because nothing ever said he was trying to gather. But maybe there's something that we're not putting together.
You might be onto something. So, right, so he's able to absorb these... rays because he is somehow an energy battery that can be recharged. And then his dad, I guess whatever that goo was that he injected himself with made him unstable. So towards the end of the movie, he's dying, and the only way for him to live is to absorb all of the Hulk's energy while the Hulk is just letting loose, right? Or something weird like that.
Well, I think, okay, so his father's super mutant ability was the ability to, what did he say, take on attributes of anything?
Yes.
Like when he became like super hard, like the block of metal he was holding. And so I think he was trying to absorb that aspect of the Hulk to stabilize. I'm not really sure how that worked.
Ugh. I don't quite understand. Let's just assume that somehow that would have worked, and that by absorbing his son's Hulk power, he could have saved himself. I still don't understand the motivations of the characters. You've got the dad who did experiments and the army tried to shut him down, so he like recklessly injected himself with his serum. You've got the general who's just perpetually pissed off and threw the dad in jail for like 900 years and now is ready to do it with the son. What is that general's hard on for these guys that he wants them in jail that badly?
I will say this about the general. He was running a successful research facility, pumping out super weapons, and this guy comes along and won't play by the rules and does like all kinds of weird research and uses unauthorized subjects and won't shut down when he's told to discontinue the research. Then this guy goes home, murders his wife, and tries to murder his son. After setting off like some kind of weird, like what was that explosion? Instead of letting his research that he had to discontinue be taken over by someone else, he just blew up the entire base.
Okay, right. So the result of that, of those crimes, is that the general himself, this doesn't get turned over to authorities, the general himself locks the dad up and then has a personal vendetta against him. But somehow the dad gets paroled. And now the general wants to throw the son in jail too, like, right? Or something? Like,
why did the dad get... I see the personal vendetta at least.
Okay, that explains the hard end the general has. You know, as you're explaining bits of this movie to me, I'm starting to think that, I mean, it kind of made a certain type of sense. So why did I hate it so much? I just couldn't get into it. Like, I was just bored to tears and not empathizing with anybody or something.
Well, I think not being able to empathize with Bruce slash the Hulk, I think a French poodle going toe-to-toe with the Hulk, and I think the last half, the just absolutely mind-boggling, like, I'm your father, but I'm a hurricane, and I want the best for you, but I'm going to kill you. Yeah.
Right, like, why wouldn't the general... Oh, geez. All right. Let me break those things down that you just mentioned. One, the father, in an effort to kill his son, I guess, has his three loyal dogs turn into Hulk dogs by shooting them with some kind of Hulk beam. And so you've got a French poodle and two other dogs that attack the Hulk. And he, of course, he gets more and more angry and eventually can just completely overpower these creatures and slams them into redwood trees and they just vaporize, which I thought was kind of funny, actually.
I'm a sucker for consistency in movies, as I'll bring up later with Battlefield Earth. But he went from barely being able to combat these dogs, and the redwoods went from completely, like, just crumbling, falling down, being knocked over at the least dog headbutt, to being able to punch them once and separate them atom from atom.
Well, remember, as he gets more angry, he gets more and more powerful. So these dogs never had a chance. Once they pissed him off enough, he would eventually get strong to the point where they couldn't beat him. That's the Hulk's, like, shtick.
That was a hell of an event horizon.
Yeah, I always thought of the Hulk's power growing on a fairly steady curve, you know, but apparently it is hyperbolic or whatever, you know, where it just shoots way up. So, right, he vaporizes the dogs, and, you know, I'm not buying still the character's motivations for some reason. Like, maybe I don't understand the original schism between the general and his dad, David Banner. Like, why would he just not, like, listen to the general in his research facility? And when his, I don't know. It makes sense when you say it, but it just didn't click with me for some reason. And then once we got into later combat sequences, it became, like, just ridiculously comical. Like, the dumb things that the Hulk was doing. He's being pursued by these helicopters and, like, they're shooting missiles at him. And I swear, you told me this and I could not believe it. He catches one missile fired by one of these helicopters, like, bites the warhead off of it, and, like, spits it back at the helicopter and blows it up. I mean, how stupid can you get? And that scene was borrowed from the queue, I swear, from the Hulk ride at Universal Studios here in Florida.
Now, if you'll notice, all of those comic colors in the background that I complain about so much, those were borrowed from the queue, too.
You're right. Did Ang Lee, like, go on a summer vacation to Universal Studios with his family, and, like, one of his kids was like, Dad, I mean, this is your next movie. Just base it on this queue.
I think we're really looking at an example of a movie based on the queue instead of the hundreds and hundreds of comics that people have known to come to love.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I think I had an idea of the Hulk. I had an idea of how this should have gone. And Ang Lee, I think, tried to make, what, a human interest movie of sorts combined with some weird, I guess, kind of a comic book. He overdid comic book where he shouldn't have, and I can't believe we haven't discussed this. When he went berserk with these weird, like, camera angles and transitions where, like, everything turns into a comic panel. Ugh, that was like nauseating, by the way. That was based on the Hulk ride, which is a roller coaster.
Right. It was trying to shuttle you this way and that, knock you around and jerk you this way and that way.
Oh, that was dreadful.
The comic book panels in film don't work very well. Like, I don't know exactly what it is, but watching six things happen, or one thing happen from six different angles, doesn't help a movie.
Right, and that's not what happens in comics. If he had split a screen up where basically he had one scene transition from panel to panel, like, it shows one guy's point of view, that scene plays out, then the next one plays, like, they play in sequence as you would read a comic, I could see that working a little bit. But the same character from four angles? No, that was dumb. Gosh. And yeah, between that and the sort of ham-fisted introduction of comic book-like background colors, I just feel like visually the movie, visually and in terms of action scenes, the movie just also fell flat. So characters I didn't care about, an unbelievable Hulk, dumb visual effects. I mean, this movie just had a lot going against it. And I just couldn't wait for it to be over. Remember, I kept asking you how much longer we had during the movie. And I wanted to like it. I wanted to, you know, because I know you've been banging on this movie for a while and I'd never seen it. And I'm thinking it can't be that bad. It was that bad, man. What a stinker of a movie. I felt worse. My night was worse for having watched that movie. And I think that's a key difference between a bad, bad movie and a bad, good movie.
But I couldn't point to any one thing and say this is what makes this a bad movie.
Right. I think that's what I was just struggling to do. Didn't it seem like I was kind of all over the place there trying to pinpoint it?
Yeah. I mean, most of those things could be said for Battlefield Earth, too. But I would watch it any time before Hulk.
Yeah, yeah. And I think with I'll do a final analogy about Hulk, and then we can move on to Battlefield Earth. Hulk is like bad meatloaf. You don't know why it tastes bad. You just know it's not good. And you're not going to bother to try to figure it out.
You're not going to pick apart the little pieces to see what it is.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, Battlefield Earth, by contrast, is like bad restaurant food that you and your friends can all chuckle about. Like at the table, like, God, this is awful. I mean, you're going to leave. You're kind of pissed. You're going to get a refund. But you're all in on the joke. Like, God, this is awful food. I can't believe they serve this. And you're kind of chuckling about it as you're asking for your money back, right?
And you're not going to spend the night in the ER.
Exactly. Exactly. So Battlefield Earth has been one of our, and we have a collection of these that we'll probably visit on other installments of Bad Movie Night. Battlefield Earth is one of these movies that we have ridiculed for years and laughed about while ridiculing it. And I think the laughter and the fact that we were laughing and in a better mood after watching this piece of crap means that it is a bad, good movie, right?
For a good, bad movie.
Sorry, yeah, good. Are we saying good, bad, or bad, good? I get them confused. Good, bad?
Oh, no.
Okay, whatever. It's bad, but it's good for being bad. And, wow. Okay, why don't you give the background on this movie?
So, I guess it's popular to, like, to hate on Scientology with this movie, but we can just avoid all of that. This is a science fiction movie with just over the top silliness in it. It's 1,000 years after these cyclos come to Earth and just basically like just take it over and defeat all of the world's militaries in less than 9 minutes. And then practically exterminate man. The only people that they keep around are the ones capable of working in their fields, their foundries.
Their mines and stuff, right?
Well, they don't even let them mine, so
oh,
no.
That's right. Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. So you've got this civilization that's utterly crushed by these cyclos, and the people have become grunting, like, superstitious cavemen. Or slaves.
Right. So some of the people still live out in the irradiated wilds because the cyclos can't chase them there. But the rest of humanity, as far as we know, is just straight up imprisoned.
Right. It's worth noting that the cyclos can't go into these irradiated zones because they breathe a certain type of breathing gas, which is, of course, what their atmosphere consists of, such that if it comes in contact with radioactive material or enters a radioactive zone, it will explode and kill them, right?
Yes.
Now, my first question is, were there no military intelligence officers in the Cyclo army that could have looked and seen this primitive culture with all its nuclear weapons and gauged that as a threat prior to the invasion?
Okay, so if you look at the deeper level of the film, that might make a lot of sense. They're not military. It's a corporation.
Oh, it's just Cyclo Incorporated, like coming to strip mine Earth clean?
Right. So maybe they didn't have military intelligence, or maybe they didn't want to spend the money on the zoning laws or whatever.
Yeah, I don't get it, because, like, who launched the nukes? Because, all right, how they beat us in 9 minutes is they basically invaded our planet with something called gas drones, which I guess are just drones that blanketed our entire planet in toxic gas, thus killing us off quickly before we could put up much of a fight. Right?
I don't know, because our atmosphere is still perfectly breathable. I guess maybe the gas drones didn't last 1,000 years?
I don't really understand what happened in this 1,000 years, but in this 1,000 years, these highly sophisticated aliens have still not managed to strip our planet clean of all its resources. So, first of all, when I say aliens, let's describe this. These are regular-sized human actors that are portraying these larger cyclos. The cyclos, and that, by the way, that's P-H-S-Y-C-L-O, cyclo, right, Brian?
Yeah, I think so.
Right. So these cyclos are giants. They're bigger than us. And the way they accomplished this effect in the movie was to have them all wear giant kiss boots from the 1970s.
I would say they're about, what, 9 foot tall?
Yeah, they're about 9 feet tall. So
there's about 3 feet of boot on every one of them.
There really is. I mean, I was expecting them to wear, like, makeup and have, like, long tongues. Oh, wait, they have long tongues. And they wear makeup. Never mind. So, yeah, 3 feet are accomplished through these bulky, ridiculous platform boots. Another 3 feet is added with another foot, I would say, is added with these big head prosthetics to make it look like they have these big, like, what, cone head things.
They're either cone heads or Geiger aliens.
Yeah, however you want to look at it. They've got these huge head skulls with, like, head crests and hair, but they do have hair growing out of them. It's really dumb. And of course, you don't want them to be out of proportion, so to make sure their hands match everything else, they have all the actors who play these cyclodes have these, like, finger extensions, which just makes it look like they have rubber finger extensions hanging from their hands.
There's no more joints or anything like that. They have our normal proportion joints with just, they like pins strapped to their fingers.
It's really terrible. And, like, so when they're gripping a gun or something, it's just so awkward. Like, just imagine, like, gripping a gun with a glove with fingers, it's like 6 inches too long, and you get the effect, right?
Yeah, that's basically what it looks like.
And the other thing is, because these actors are stumbling around in these ridiculous platform boots, they're not able to run. So at various points during the movie, during the heat of combat, these aliens are just like leisurely strolling.
They're heavily armed and moving fast.
Yes. There is one scene where and here's a huge spoiler, the humans revolt. But during the fighting, during the human revolution, that exact thing is uttered. A person calls over the radio to his comrade that several cyclos are approaching, heavily armed and moving fast. And they're just, like, awkwardly holding the pistols in their long rubber fingers and walking because they can't move fast. All right, so now that we got the dumb appearance out of the way, there's the dumb premise of this movie, which is that this incompetent manager of the planet Earth wants to get off planet Earth. So to get off planet Earth, he wants to turn in a huge shipment of gold for the home office, right?
He was planning on keeping the gold for himself because he was smuggling it home, so they weren't going to know about it. So I don't know how he was going to get home.
Some stupid thing. Well, they just have a transporter that... The way they loot the planet is they transport everything to their home planet of Cyclo or Cyclon or whatever the hell it's called. And whatever. So this guy needs gold. So he comes up with this plan to train humans, which they call man animals, to mine. And the Cyclos believe that humans are incapable of sophisticated activities such as mining, in spite of the fact that they're fully cognizant of the fact that we had a planet-spanning civilization, albeit an inferior one to theirs. They actually think that we, like, have, like, no capacity for the use of mechanical devices. But they know we had jets, so explain that one.
So over the 1,000 years between, quote-unquote, now and this movie, we may have somehow degenerated into, like, grunting troglodytes, but some of them knew us, like, tomorrow. Some of them actually knew before we lost all of our tradition and all of our knowledge.
And they could still visit our cities and see our monuments and our statues and our military bases and our treasury reserves full of gold. Oh, wait, they couldn't see that. So this idiot Turl, the Cyclone that's running the operation, gets the idea to see if man animals can learn. So he grabs one of the man animals that he captures and plugs him into a learning machine, which just beams knowledge into your brain. in order for them to learn the Cyclone language. Language.
You're forgetting one of my favorite parts about that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So Turl is, of course, like some kind of backbiting upper executive management type.
John Travolta. So
he has to have leverage over whoever he's dealing with. So he decides that he needs leverage over this troglodytic, grunting animal, man-animal, in the form of his favorite food.
Oh, yes. Yes. So, go ahead.
He fakes an escape. He basically lets the guy run. So the guy runs away, has no weapons, no food, no nothing, chases him through the forest for, what did they say, 3 days?
Yeah.
And assumes that the first thing he eats after starving for 3 days is his very favorite food. Because why would you do anything but celebrate with your favorite food after escaping from those guys?
Yes.
Which leads to the scene in the movie when he's plucked off of the learning machine after learning the Cyclo's language. And in this kind of weird half English, half Cyclo language, John Travolta shoves a rat in this guy's mouth. Do you want one?
And shockingly, the guy who's no longer starving doesn't want to eat a raw rat.
And he can't figure it out.
But the guy still earns the nickname.
Everybody's called Rat Brain. I mean.
So John Travolta obnoxiously calls this main protagonist Rat Brain for the rest of the movie. Teaches him with the learning machine, not just the Cyclone language, so he can communicate with him and make him lead a mining expedition on his behalf, which is against Cyclo rules. But also basically lets him know everything about the Cyclos, to include their history, their vulnerabilities, etc., such that he can successfully lead a revolution against the corporation. How dumb. So, John Travolta, the Cyclo, flies this contingent of miners led by the now Cyclo-speaking Rat Brain out into the countryside to mine gold for him, and says, I'll be back in so many days to pick up the shipment. You better have this like container filled with gold by the time I come back. And Rat Brain is no slouch. Rat Brain knows exactly where he can get a huge quantity of gold to satisfy Turl while leading his people in plotting a revolution. Right, Brian? Is that more or less it?
Well, for some strange reason, even though the Cyclos had no knowledge of it, the Cyclo learning machines told him all about Fort Knox.
I forgot. That's right. The stupid learning machine told him where the United States kept all of its gold. None of the Cyclos ever bothered plugging into their own learning machine. So Rat Brain decides a shortcut to getting the gold is to go to Fort Knox and clean it all out of gold, while also going and trying to find weapons and other things to fight back against these Cyclos with.
He raids Fort Hood, is it? In Texas or something?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so
the movie tells you, I don't remember. He raids a military base. He finds MiGs with 1,000-year-old volatile fuel.
Harriers, actually.
Harriers, sorry. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, with fuel that still works, and like finds a flight simulator, right?
He finds a flight simulator that's been plugged in for 1,000 years with no one paying the bill, still bucking and jumping.
Right.
Like an angry deity.
He enters a base that still has power for some reason after 1,000 years. His like caveman companions start spearing and grunting at this flight simulator, which has turned on and is doing some kind of a flight simulation. And Rat Brain, remembering his own experience in the learning machine, concludes that this is a human learning machine, and one by one straps his caveman buddies into it so they can learn to be fighter pilots. Because that's
easy. Someone comments, is just like breaking a horse.
Yes.
All you have to do is overcome the personality of the inanimate object you're inside.
So that's all it takes after 1,000 years of living as caveman, is sitting in a simulator for a little while, and then you learn to be an awesome pilot at the Harrier jump jet.
At some point, someone is scared witless by a light turning on.
Yes.
They comment that they have no written history whatsoever, The extent of their oral tradition is talking about McDonald's. They think all the statues in the city are great warriors turned to stone for disobeying the gods.
Yes. Yes.
But 20 minutes with a flight simulator.
And they're ready to go. Right.
And they excel even past the trained warriors we have today. Because, as you know, the entire world's military was defeated in 9 minutes.
Right.
Whereas these 12 guys with Harriers.
Terrell takes him on a little field trip before deploying his mining team to let him know. Like, he takes him to, like, the Library of Congress and, like, here, look at anything you want. Just know that we totally destroyed your civilization in, like, 9 minutes, thus acknowledging that we did have a civilization, even though he was acting as though we didn't have one a few minutes before. And anyway, fast forward. Terrell comes back, and the gold is beyond expectations. The Rat Brain and his crew have filled up the treasure hauling cage full of gold, all while also taking breaks to train in Harriers and so on. And Terrell, of course, is really angry that instead of optimizing the amount of gold in the hall, Ratbrain and the crew wasted time by smelting it into bars with Fort Knox written on them.
Even though he had to requisition and had to provide them with all of the equipment they have, so he knows they don't have any smelting equipment.
Right, so Terrell is not at all suspicious about how they managed to smelt things without proper smelters, takes the gold, and then Rat Brain and the gang proceed with their revolution. Oh, I think at some point also Terrell intimidates him, letting him know that the Cyclo military prowess is overwhelming. He demonstrates this by shooting the legs off of a nearby cow at some point. I don't want to leave that out.
He shoots, like, the cow in the knee, the leg goes flying, and the cow slowly tips.
Oh, gosh, yeah. The cow shooting was one of the more interesting parts of the movie. So, blah, blah, there's a bunch of intrigue between Terrell and his number two guy, and then the revolution starts, and the humans attack with their fighter planes, and engage in combat with the Cyclos. And the Cyclos live in a big greenhouse, a big glass greenhouse that has their atmosphere in it. And the humans want to destroy this thing, so they're, you know, trying to blow up the greenhouse in the process. And as well, they know that once they defeat the Cyclo presence, it's only a matter of time before the Cyclos come back and their gas drones kill the remaining humans on the planet. So they get this plan to take a nuclear weapon from the base. I guess Ratbrain knew all this stuff from the Cyclo learning machine. And instead of beaming gold or other looted items from Earth back to the Cyclo homeworld, which of course consists of an atmosphere of this volatile gas, he's going to send the nuke back, and then that'll be the end of the Cyclos. Great plan. The Cyclos really just have no security regime. It occurs to me.
Yeah, they don't like monitor incoming traffic for very dangerous things.
Right, like their custom system sucks. So anyway, like there's really not that much interesting to talk about in the battle. It's cavemen with like 3 weeks of training fighting off like Cyclo fighter pilots and their superior jets. Somehow they all got guns, there's a big ground battle, blah blah blah. They blow up the thing and then they beam the stupid nuke back to planet Cyclon. And then Planet Cyclon blows up. And probably the funniest thing in the movie happens. Go ahead, Brian.
So this planet, it basically a single massive explosion because the entire atmosphere just ignites all at once. This planet just blows up, doing absolutely no damage to the orbiting moon, but shooting it off like a marble. Whee!
And our big joke is that the moon couldn't wait to escape this movie. So it, like, gleefully, like, I'm out of here! Whee!
Free at last!
Oh, gosh. And that's Battlefield Earth. And it's funnier than we can probably convey here. You will laugh at how terrible this movie is. I mean, just the awful quotes, the awful acting, the terrible premise, the bad costumes, the friendly bartender! Other funny aspects, I would say.
I've watched this movie probably 10 or 15 times. It's fun. I mean, it's horrible. It's god-awful. There's nothing sensical about it. But it's really fun.
Yeah. It's fun to make fun of this movie. Therefore, the movie's fun. And man, it is. It's almost like it was designed to be made fun of. And what special effects were in the movie have not aged very well, which makes it even more comical, I will point out. Battlefield Earth, baby. We're going to have to read the book at some point. I've heard it was good.
Yeah, I've heard the book is actually, like, pretty well done, which kind of makes sense to me. I mean, L. Ron Hubbard wasn't an idiot. I mean, he wrote a lot of books.
Yeah, and his books were alleged to be good. But let me ask you this. Where was the Scientology angle on this? I remember people saying that this was like a advertisement of some sort for Scientology, and I didn't get any kind of an overarching like religious message here.
I don't want to piss anybody off, but I believe Xenu was supposed to have been a cyclo.
Oh, no.
Something like that. Something like that, yeah, seriously. I don't remember what they're called, but like the bad demon aliens were cyclos or...
The Thetans?
That's it, you're right, the Thetans.
Then at no point did they refer to the planet Earth as T-Jack, which is what it's called in the Scientologist mythology.
Well, this would have been like alternate history or alternate future, not historical.
Oh, I see. Oh, right. So all that bit happened with the Thetans and everything. Huh. So the Thetans, which are the little body spirits that are the little body parasites that occupied Earth, are actually making the cyclos stupid while they're here.
That could be. That might explain a lot.
Something is going to have to explain a lot, because this movie defies explanation, other than they just weren't trying. And John Travolta is a talented actor, but in this, he was just hamming it up, man.
I hear a lot of people refer to metal music as self-referential. Like, you know, Kiss wasn't taking it seriously. Like, they knew they were having fun with it. Like, Dragon Force. Those guys are having fun with it. They're not out there to like, wait, you don't take our songs about Vikings and dragons seriously? I think maybe these guys were having fun with it. I hope so.
I want to believe that, but no, I really think that this was like a serious sci-fi movie. Like, this is no joke. I mean, you're supposed to root for these humans, and these cyclos are real bad guys, and you really want them to go down instead of just finding them comical, which I did. Oh, God. So Battlefield Earth, in sharp contrast to Hulk, a bad movie that you will come away from laughing and feeling better. So anything else to say about bad movies, sir, or should we wrap this one up?
I'd like to ask, if you don't mind, that the listening audience recommend some of their own bad movies. Because this was fun. I really enjoyed this. First off, as an outing to hang out and watch these bad movies. And I love talking about them. So talking about it on the show has just made my night. But I'd love to be introduced to more. So don't say Dungeons & Dragons, because I've seen that one and we'll be doing it eventually. And I can't think of any others. So say whatever else.
Yeah, Dungeons & Dragons is definitely coming up. And don't mention the animated Lord of the Rings movies. Those are already in the queue, too.
Excellent point.
Do suggest bad movies. We love them, and we want to watch more of them and report on them to you, dear audience.
Just make sure you mention if it's a good bad movie or a bad bad movie, because two bad bad movies, and you might never get another episode, because I'd shoot myself.
Right, we'll be bad bad dead. Well, here's a good recommendation for you folks. If you use iTunes, feel free to subscribe to our podcast, give us a favorable review, rate us maximum stars, etc. Feel free to do that in whatever podcatching software you might happen to use. And also check us out on the excellent streaming service known as Stitcher.
And don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus us on Google+. And if you're really into sharing the bad movie night experience, join us on our Facebook group, and we'll be happy to talk about those.
And, of course, drop us a line, especially with your bad movie suggestions, at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com. And check out our awesome website at nerdstravaganza.com. And with all that self-promotional housekeeping out of the way, I think there's only one thing left to say.
You wouldn't last one day at the Academy!
So bad!